Chapter 14, Financial Frets. We poor aren't the only ones who fret. The rich are fretting too. Ever since the big bailout, they've been losing points in the status and admiration department. What's going on with them and with us? First off, our cultural ethics are on a slow boat to Never Never Land. Here's an example. Say you have two sons. One son you give everything to. A new car, designer clothes, college tuition, apartment rent, and constant praise. The other gets no car, no college tuition, no apartment rent, but works in a fast food restaurant as he has to pay you rent. Comes home, mows the lawn, cleans the garage, and is continually told he's a lazy, stupid loser. One kid gets it all, the other nothing. And to top that off, is told he's a stupid loser. This is what the populace does to itself. A brief history and why. Why do we have this huge level of inequality in America? I know some people have IQs much higher than others, but nobody has an IQ 10 million points higher. In fact, I don't know anyone, not even the most brilliant scientists, who has an IQ more than 40 points higher than average. So why? Ever since I was a kid, I thought it was a capitalistic system that set up the rules of the game. In school, we were taught that what was the most important work got the biggest reward. That was standard doctrine. As standard as murder was against the law. And furthermore, if I studied hard and worked diligently, I too would be highly rewarded. We were told it took the savviest people to make the wheels turn, that this person who'd paid his dues got the compensation. Work hard and the payoff will come. All seemed pretty fair to me. It wasn't. It was a setup. And it wasn't the agricultural revolution, the industrial revolution, capitalism, or the technological revolution that set up the value of our work life, as it's been claimed in all the history and anthropology textbooks. It was the nobility of the Roman Empire a couple thousand years ago that decided who and what had monetary value and who and what didn't. And although this value standard of the Roman nobility passed its usefulness long ago, we still follow it. Even religions supported the setup. Pope Boniface VII said, "Only deference to a higher social order can redeem the lower social order." Some things have been reassessed over the centuries, slightly. For instance, during the medieval period, it was the warriors and clerics who were the objects of status, admiration, and wealth. Today, it's celebrities and billionaires. So before we go on, let's listen to the rich justify their unequal share of the pie. How about this guy who made $100 million a year saying, quote, "He wasn't paid enough, he deserved more." I am so far from his philosophy, I'm from the planet, If those from the various highest income group are growing richer, and they are, it's because America rewards unusual savvy people extraordinary well. That's a quote, too, from the New York Sun. Unusually savvy? What hedge fund manager is that? Quote, "There is a reason unions are in decline. Big labor is missing the dynamic nature of the 21st century global economy." That's from the National Review. "Lucky for the teachers' unions, they can't move the kids and schools to India or China. And it's not the unions, but the government, the populace, and the corporations that should understand the dynamic nature of the 21st century global economy and make the needed changes." Quote, "It's not the wages at the bottom that are declining, but that wages at the top have been growing. That's a good thing. We like it when our investments pay higher returns," unquote. That was from an interview with Edward Lasser, previous chairman of the Council of Economics. Yeah, especially when the investment returns go to the rich, we like it, or they like it. A Wall Street investor said, quote, "Screw you. Even if you change legislation, the government won't get a single penny from me in taxes." That's from the Atlantic Monthly, February 2011. "Wonder if I could put my few measly bucks in the Cayman Islands, too." A CEO of a company said, "If Americans were going to demand 10 times the pay of the rest of the world, then they have to put out 10 times the work," unquote. Come on, CEO. If we have to put out 10 times more work to earn our pay, how about you putting out 10 million times the work you get paid? The CEO of Goldman Sachs said, quote, "He's doing God's work," unquote. Let's see your credentials from God, CEO. An oligarch said, everyone, quote, "has the same starting conditions. Anyone could have done it," unquote. I like the idea that all 300 million of us can make 10 million a year. But that's enough about the ignoramuses at the top. As a basic premise of the Roman nobility that those who strain their bodies and shorten their lives for us are the dregs and worth little is still with us. And without a major overhaul, it will probably stay the same. Therefore, as most of us aren't in a position to anything about it, let's look at our personal monetary problems, seeing as we must make the best of them in this unethical and immoral stacked deck we live in. Forget those trivial worries about our weaknesses, tiredness, or pot belly that won't go away no matter how long we stay on the Stairmaster. As for the wrinkles and gray hair, we've talked enough about them. Because, besides, we can't do much about those problems. But here's something we can do something about. We can gloat because we are happier than the rich. Think of the misery of the multimillionaire who said, and I quote, "I can't feel financially secure until I have $1 billion in the bank." From the Atlantic Monthly, March 2011. Poor slob. I'm not the loftiest tree in the forest when it comes to understanding money, but here's my best shot at this religion we all believe in. No atheists here, not when it comes to the gospel of money. First, to make our life easier, we can do something about our consumption crazy ways. In fact, if we're in our 60s, we may become so financially challenged we may be forced to do something. So pay attention, kids, meaning all you 60-year-olds. The halcyon period of rampant consumerism has had its day. We studied hard and worked diligently and didn't make it to the top like they promised in our youth. Not making it certainly isn't your first disappointment. We've lived through lots of disappointments and lasted. And we'll last through this recession one, too. So you're worried about the specter of poverty that always looms when we're mortgaged up to the whim-wham. And you don't have that stash of Krugerrands under the mattress for these inauspicious times. An occasion, not often, but often enough, some depression baby that followed the money nevertheless wakes up broke, and I mean dead broke. He wallows for a while, then pulls it together, thinks of everything from selling that Mercedes at a loss to wondering if they still have those elderly communes he's read about where half a dozen elderly people live together. And if worse comes to worse, he wonders if he's got any talent at panhandling on the streets. Oops, now what? Well, let's discuss deferred gratification. Most of us learned about deferred gratification, an unknown term back in the Depression, when we were in high school, and all the kids that were from families with steady paychecks got a pair of those shoes that were popular at that time. But we promised ourselves someday, and when someday came, to hell with deferred gratification, we got our shoes and then some. My friends nowadays don't own any special shoes, as they fall into two categories: those saving their money for their kids to inherit, and two, those who spend their kids' inheritance. I don't know where I stand. All I do know is that I was trained early in deferred gratification, and it has stayed with me. I'm not starving, squatting on a street corner with a sign reading, "Will work bless you." So maybe that deferred gratification thing worked. When we hit the retirement juggernaut and our incomes become a minus, and we realize we probably won't be able to maintain our previous standard of living, it's horrors what to do. What we have to do is cut way back. As for handling it psychologically, about all we can do is think of this change as a challenge. For example, as I pointed out, instead of eating out, learn to cook for yourself or eat canned soup and TV dinners. So you eat a lot of pasta. Just don't make eating your primary occupation, which is easy to do. Instead of traveling, find fun things to do in your small area, like going to the senior center or church activities. You'll also make friends. As for clothing, shop Salvation Army thrift stores. I assure you, no one will know the difference. As for that new car, boat, or airplane, don't despair. Think positive. You're too old for toys. Now to that mortgage. If the banks aren't in a mood to finagle with you, then screw 'em. A house is merely a shelter, and there's a lot of shelters around town where you can stay. Also, living in one room can be fun. Easy to keep the stuff picked up. I've lived in one room, and I'm still here. As for debts, sell everything you can, but try to hang on to a pair of wheels. Everything else can go, but without wheels, life's a hassle. Here's something I remember from my childhood of thrift. I was complaining to my mom about my holy socks. "When you get home tonight, I'll darn your socks," Mama said. "Mom, cautious. What? Can I go see this cartoon musical at the theater? All the kids are going. I have to get permission." It came out in a flurry. "How much?" Mama said. Like a quarter," came out in a mutter. "No. Please, oh please, Mom," I begged. When I say no, I mean no, and that's that. When Mom got that tone of voice, no amount of lobbying would change her mind. I could bow and scrape, crawl through nuclear waste, and she wouldn't change her mind. The point is, live cheap. Come to think of it, I guess I'm more than cheap. I'm a tightwad. But I think what we do with our money depends not so much on whether we're in the boomer area, with its emphasis on consumerism, or in the Depression era, with its penny-pinching emphasis. We have our parents, our childhood peers, our education, and the media to thank for wherever we are financially, as each gave us a pretty good brainwash as kids. So cheer up, Depression era cohorts. We're tightwads, but we're also tough and the greatest generation. I've been told it's tacky and behind the times to use paper money, that everybody who's anybody uses credit cards. I can't understand credit card users' reasoning. I've seen people shopping around looking to find a sale. They find what they're looking for at 20% off, and then they pay that 20% on their credit card for it. Yeah, I have much to learn. been reading a lot lately justifying the inequality of wealth. In my personal opinion, there's two ways to redistribute wealth, and that is to, one, have a revolution, and two, change the values that have been around for thousands of years. The values may be changing somewhat, as a guy who defreezes our pipes may make almost as much an hour as some lawyers, although I say that with some hesitation. Like today, doctors are more valuable to society than mechanics. I know, we value our digestive tract more than we value our car's transmission, and hence the greater reward. I used to fall for that one too. But we're not talking about petty ante stuff here. We're talking about the other end of the hierarchy, those bankers, hedge fund managers, and Wall Street moguls. So we've ceased to glorify these rich guys, and they're more than fretting about it. They're pissed. So Karl Marx, I ask you, what will our out-of-work next generation do when the robots and computers take over? Stay tuned.